right, good morning. I'm going to talk about that buzzword that Wayne alluded to that everybody wants to avoid. So acknowledge some co-authors. These are my guys, been working for me. As Wayne says, those are critical to all of our research programs, but some of them have been with me as long as 8 to 10 years. So parts of Mavumba, who has his doctorate now, and then Bill Soufal and Anthony Penarts. But I want to talk to you about some of the soil health benefits and conservation cotton systems and what that may look like. I'm talking about conservation ag and general across the U.S., a recent survey from ERS, and they consider conservation tillage to be a no-till, strip-till, or mulch tillage, and if you kind of look at the big four, if you will, soybean, cotton, wheat, corn, cotton. You look at soybean, corn, and wheat, high adoption rate of conservation tillage in that 65% to 70% range. Then you look at cotton, it's about 40%, and this is based on survey respondents. And then if you look at the southeast, cotton, about 68% adoption of conservation tillage. And then you look through the Texas High Plains and western Oklahoma and up into southern Kansas, that's about 27% adoption rate based on survey respondents, which is probably a little high of what we actually see. So cotton's definitely lagging nationwide, and particularly in general in Texas, adoption of that. And then crop rotation is not well incorporated in cotton systems within Texas either. So we kind of have an uphill battle of conservation ag and promoting that in cotton systems. So some goals and initiatives on soil health in the past 7-8 years. There's been several, starting with the USDA NRCS Soil Health Initiative. I believe that came out in fall 2012. Really brought a new renewed interest to soil health across the U.S. and a lot of interest, and probably drove a lot of the interest that we see now. Then Global Soil Security, this new conference started in 2015, Christine Morgan and others. Set some goals at that initial conference in 2015, which was held in College Station. One of those goals, we want to see a 20% increase in water capture by soil by 2030. Just some goals set. And then the 4 per million initiative, where the plan would be to increase soil organic carbon by 0.4% annually. I think we have some data in Texas. Dr. Lewis is working on that. She hadn't been able to do 0.4% yet, right? And yeah. Much less annually, much less 20 years. So can we meet these initiatives? And the question comes down to, what is soil health? And everybody you ask probably has a different answer, but kind of the way I like to think of it would be capacity of a soil to function. Now, what does that mean? Sustained productivity of that, and that includes a lot of different disciplines, environmental health, plant, animal, human health even. Condition in the soil can be inferred by measuring specific soil properties. Soil organic carbon has long been kind of the gold standard that people have looked at. And observing soil fertility status. McBrantley said, like his quote, little value in talking about soil health of any given soil unless there's understanding of how healthy it can actually be. So do we know what we're actually after? Some soil health indicators. Again, soil organic carbon has always been popular and kind of the gold standard that everybody wants to look at, particularly producers. They always want to look at, well, what's my soil organic matter? Looking at improved infiltration, soil strength, or structure. NRCS, when they came out with their soil health initiative, they are heavily promoting the Haney test, or the soil health assessment, or soil health tool, focusing on water extractable organic carbon, which is supposed to be that fraction of the soil carbon that microbes use as energy source, as their food source. So it's a small part of the organic carbon, but it's supposed to be the energy source that you can look at and see how healthy your soil is, and combine that with CO2 respiration to see the microbial activity. So it really shifted to biology. And then more biological test, phospholipid fatty acid analysis. Now we're getting in over my head, but another microbial test that has become very popular. And over time, the labs, whether that be Cornell, Soil Food Web, but you can probably find some lab that would do some soil health tests now, you know, maybe shake and bake to something elaborate as PLFA. So there's a lot of different things. And the bottom line, what is soil health telling us? Does soil health correlate to yield? We hear that a lot. Well, if you have healthy soils, you see that turn into yield. Well, I don't know if we should be going that route. And does it matter if it correlates to yield or not? So kind of the thought process there, this is from a 12-year no-till field, and this is wheat. So this is summer cover crops and wheat. But picture on the left, that'd be conventional till. These are half-acre plots. So I'm standing in the alley between plots. And that's after harvest, after we had heavy rain. And that May, you can see the ruts highly visible there on the left. That's through a conventional till plot. So that's at least a foot deep. Had 5-gallon bucket sitting in that rut. But if you pivot 180 and look the other way, when that combine came out of the conventional till plot and went into the no-till plot with, I think this one did have cover crops, but you can just kind of see where it tracked through. So there's some soil strength buildup of some sort, so should that be worth something? Now, the yield was similar between these plots. So now if we can correlate this to yield, but overall soil structure, we see an improvement, and this should count as towards some type of soil health benefit, right? We're improving soil function, as I would like to say. Of course, you look at water and wind erosion. This would be water erosion. This is from that same field, but the red bar is conventional tillage. And, you know, no-till has gone a long way to reduce soil erosion via water and wind. And when you run off water, this is from simulated rainfall studies we've done in the upper right corner there. You have basically it looks like a mud pie versus something that's transparent. So what's the benefit of that? Of that system. So I'm going to kind of focus in on one system that we've been evaluating there at Vernon, and this is at our Chillicothe Research Station in North Texas, and we've been evaluating this since 2008. So it includes 4 tillage treatments: conventional till, strip till, no-till, then no-till with a terminated wheat cover crop. This is on a clay loam soil, and it's on subsurface drip irrigation, 8-row by 150-foot plots. 3 reps, and again, established 2008. Strip till was established 2011, took place for reduced till treatment. But going left to right, there's cotton emerging and cotton conventional till, no-till, and then no-till with that terminated cover crop. So first thing we looked at was soil organic carbon about 5 years in. I've shown this graph or this table at this meeting before. And 5 or 6 years in, you know, kind of starting to look at some different things, and soil organic carbon is kind of the standard, so we want to look at that first, and kind of disappointed in the results. I thought, well, for sure, after 5 or 6 years planting a wheat cover crop and doing no-till, we're going to see some benefits here, but as you can see, statistically no differences. You go left to right, conventional till, strip till, no-till, no-till the wheat cover crop, but very similar values in organic carbon. And if you look at bulk density and you look at the mass of carbon, it's similar as well, no differences. So didn't see differences in the organic carbon, but I've showed this here in the past, but we did see differences in infiltration rates. This is single ring infiltrometer data. The green bar would be no-till with a wheat cover crop, and then surprisingly, we didn't see any benefit of no-till over conventional till or strip-till, but where we did incorporate a wheat cover crop, we saw much higher infiltration. Then if you look at penetration resistance, in the line graph, the 2 bars on the left after you get down past that plow pan at about 10 to 12 centimeters over the drip take, you can see we've alleviated in about 5 or 6 years any plow pan issues or compaction issues, and the red and yellow would be the strip till, conventional till to the right. So we see better or reduced resistance with depth over time with our no-till and our no-till with the cover crop. So another way of looking at infiltration is look at soil moisture and how it changes over time. And this is our soil moisture focusing in on the very far left, and that'd be where we have a cover crop. It's that green line dips down here at termination, and we always recover that soil moisture with rainfall. Mostly rainfall most of the time. Sometimes it has to be irrigation, but in every year but one I can think of, it's been due to precipitation. We recovered that lost soil moisture. Yes, cover crops do use water, but we typically recover that. So to get into some of these soil health tests, This is Haney test. So I'll show you about three slides of the Haney test. And this is over a three-year average period. So this is years 2015 through 2017. So this would be like year 8, 9, and 10 of this system. So the next few graphs, four graphs, will be similar. Gray bars, conventional tills, strip tills, yellow. No-till without a cover crop is blue. No-till with a wheat is green. And no-till with a mixed cover crop is red. So we did a mixed cover crop for 3 years. But this is CO2 respiration. It's supposed to show microbial activity. Didn't really see any differences when we looked at that measurement other than the no-till mix over no-till without a cover crop. So that, you know, really didn't tell us a whole lot when we looked at CO2 respiration. So then we used that test and we sent these tests. And the good thing about this test, I guess, is that it is free. So it's not going to cost anything other than shipping. So water extractable organic carbon, which is supposed to be the energy source for microbial. Very similar results, not much differences. No-till mix was higher than the no-till. It's really the only thing from a statistical standpoint. So then you get this soil health calculation. It's supposed to tell you how healthy your soil is. I think it's on a scale of 0 to 15 at this time, so we're in the 4 to 6 range. So I guess we're moderately sick, I guess. I don't know. But very kind of, you know, 4 to 6 range on a scale of 15. But again, not much differences. We see the mix being higher than the no-till and the conventional till. So how does this correlate to yield? Just for the fun of it, this is the yield. We do see that mix being higher than conventional till, but, you know, really not a good correlation, especially if you look at that annually. But this is over a three-year average. So to look at some PLFA data over time, and the next four slides or so will be the same pattern. Gray is conventional till, yellow is strip till, the blue is no-till without a cover crop, and then the green is no-till with a terminated wheat cover crop. So total PLFA, kind of the total microbial biomass per se. And this was taken in July of 2019 of last year. So we wanted to take this measurement as the plant was entering bloom. So as the plant is kind of making the decision of what it wants to do, how healthy is our soil at that standpoint when it's making a decision to put on fruiting. So no-till wheat was higher than conventional till, but the trend that we saw with total PLFA, kind of microbial biomass, and this would be year 12 of this system, so after 12 years or 13 years, 12 I guess, no-till wheat, it was trending higher definitely with incorporating wheat cover crop and no-till over conventional till, so it's superior to conventional tillage. So then if you look bacteria, and this is gram-negative versus gram-positive, gram-negative being the solid bar, gram-negative being the shaded bar. No-till, same trend, no-till wheat is higher than conventional till, but trending higher if you start a conventional till with conservation till or strip till, then no-till, and then no-till with a wheat cover crop. So on PLFA, bacteria in the soil, kind of trending higher for the no-till wheat system. Then mycorrhizal fungi, which everybody really likes to look at as far as being an important soil health indicator, and this is in the soil. So again, it's a very similar trend that we've seen with some of these other PLFA analysis, higher with a no-till with a wheat cover crop over the conventional till, but trending higher with the conservation tillage systems over conventional till. So trending higher than conventional till with strip till, no-till, and no-till with a wheat cover crop. So I think the next slide is yield. So I want to look at how this compares to yield in a long-term system. So I looked at this over a six-year average. So it would have been years 6 through 11. So six-year average, 2013 through 2018, just to see how it can compare. And if you look at yield, kind of the same trend as we were seeing with some of these PLFA analysis, no-till with the wheat being higher than strip-till and conventional till. So similar trend on a long-term average. Now, if I took this data and I looked at it from an annual perspective, it'd be very difficult and on an annual basis. But a general long-term trend, we see that with yield and kind of the trends we saw this last summer show similar trends for some of these PLFA analyses. So in conclusion, to continue with irrigated cotton systems, we cover crop enhanced soil health compared to conventional tillage. What are these soil health benefits? We see increased infiltration, improved soil strength, microbial communities. Soil health indicators are not always correlated to the yield potential, but they do have the potential to show similar trends or trends that you may see in yield. Now, I could show you a data set from a dryland system that would completely turn that around. So, but for this system, longer term, it seems to we can at least identify a trend. So the question is, are more expensive time-consuming testing procedures, are they necessary? Do you want to pay $50 a sample for a PLFA? Maybe you want to go buy some briefs or something, do the soil your undies campaign where you bury a pair of underwear that shows you some degradation and potential microbial respiration, or there's some shake and bake, Dr. Forbes yesterday. Some things you can get to do some trends. So there's some things you can do to show trends that you may also find with these very expensive soil testing procedures. So with that, I will take any questions if there are any. Kevin. Yeah, so we have the question was, if you look at bulk density, how would that change the soil organic carbon? And we have the bulk density, we have the mass, and there's very little differences in bulk density. And so we see the same trends when we look at it on a mass basis as well. Now, that goes back to timing of sampling too, especially if you try to do bulk density right after you tilled, analyze things like that. So it's really about timing. But in the surface soil at La Mesa, for instance, we have seen some differences in the top 10 centimeters or so, but we haven't seen that in our clay loam soils at Chillicothe. Galen. So the question was, if you're not seeing changes in bulk density, what is about infiltration? What's changing that? That's a good question, and can we answer that for sure? No. Maybe it's, I think with bulk density, it's such a variable measurement, like everything in soil, and maybe taking 3 or 4 cores per plot is not sufficient to capture everything that we're seeing with infiltration, but Forbes and I talk about the variability in measuring infiltration as well. But it's all variable. But maybe those micropore channels that we're creating with roots, maybe that's not picked up in bulk density in the surface soils. I don't know, but maybe we're just not doing good enough job and enough sampling. But there should be a correlation there you would expect it. Wayne. So the question is there a relationship between soil strength, bulk density, and compaction? We have seen with depth, and this is in a soil science paper that's at La Mesa, we did see a correlation between all three of those, bulk density and soil strength at depth at that plow plan layer. So we saw reduced increased penetration resistance at, say, 10 to 15 centimeters. We saw increased bulk density at that 10 to 15 centimeters as well. So, theoretically, you should see a correlation between bulk density, soil compaction, and soil penetration.